Mini episode 773 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge. Mini episode number 773. It's your favorite football talkers anywhere. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross breaking down NFL Week 8 for you, as we have been doing all throughout the season here. Last week, continuing the mixed bag, mostly filled with shite on my part, but somewhat mixed. I went 8-6 last week, or 8-6-1 rather, 51-51-5. For the year, picking all the games is as good as it gets for me, because it's a steep downhill plunge from there. 0-3 on my big three last week, a comical 5-16 for the season, 0-1 on my lock, 0-7 for the season. It's a lock to do something, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I've ever said. Technically, I never said what it was a lock to do. So 0-7, 7-0, I guess it all depends on how you look at it here. Kyle, I think I had you for 2-4 last week. I'm not 100% sure, and I guess a true professional would have asked you before the show.
that is true, and I'm not doing very well either, quite frankly.
19-22, but again, just one or two strong weeks here away from living the high life again here. You can, as I'm trotting out expressions like that, you can tell I've been watching a lot of old PBA tournaments on YouTube in my spare time, so.
Why would you do that?
I love classic PBA, brother. I came up on it. I realized that was slightly a little bit before your time, but it was a big Russ Dell phenomenon, my man, back in the day. Earl Anthony, Mark Roth, Mike Aldi, all the kingpins of the lanes. Yeah, there's a treasure trove of good stuff out there on YouTube, thank God. So, yeah, living the highlights. You might hear some dated expressions.
My God is more appropriate than thank God. I don't even know what I've just heard. I do not know what I have just heard.
I love when I can leave you so flummoxed like this right before we start doing our game breakdowns.
Between you watching old PBA on YouTube and the guy who was the best man at my wedding constantly stumping for Jill Stein, who the fuck am I hanging out with these days?
You know,
are you fucking kidding me? The PBA on YouTube and Jill Stein is what I got to work with in my life. Honey, are you home yet? Please.
I salute your friend, by the way, for doing that, for standing up for his principles as somebody who is standing up for Daryl Castle of the Constitution Party, vote early, vote often. I applaud your friend for breaking the shackles of the two-party system, my man.
Vote early, vote often. I think that's the only chance Daryl Castle might have to do anything in this election.
I think the ends justify the means.
I think there's a better chance that that show Castle wins an Oscar, or an Emmy, than Daryl Castle has of getting to the White House. Daryl Castle!
The finest choice for president on the ballot this year, even if I have to write him in the state of Ohio, which apparently I might have. There will be a lot of other industrious people.
You just need, from your perspective, the finest choice, because is he even on the ballot is my question.
He's on the ballot in many states, Kyle. That's the best I could tell you.
In many states.
I'm not up on the current map.
That sounds like a Donald Trump endorsement. He's on the ballot in many states. Yes, we'll be on the ballot in many states. Daryl Castle?
I am in a few Castle groups on Facebook, but even I can't tell you which states he's on at the moment here. I'm a little bit behind on that, as it were. But from the shite show of the election to what has been our record on NFL picks this year. How's that for a segue? We start with the Thursday night game, as always, and we gloss over.
Let me jump in.
Yeah.
Let me just jump in. Is this our last show in the fine 8-year tenure that is the Barack Obama administration, or do we have – no, we'll have one more, won't we? We'll have one more.
Before the election, anyways.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. That's right. Before,
we're stuck with the Kenyan squatter-in-chief until January 20th. Thank you very much.
Okay, that is completely uncalled for. I don't subscribe to anything I just heard. And I think there's a week off in between the conference championship and the Super Bowl. I think we should come – I should do a special FBH Lounge show where we salute – the fine 8 years of the Obama presidency. What a human being. What a hoot.
The only salute he's going to get from me is the one that Steve Austin used to give on the middle turnbuckle back in the day, okay?
By the way, that was
a... It only requires two digits, Kyle.
That wasn't you in Philly last night, by the way, was it? The guy who flipped off...
No, but that was across the ending... I'll tell you what, man, what a time to find out that Vine is going away, right? Vine was created for moments like that, and now Twitter's going to pull the plug on it. It doesn't seem right.
I feel bad for accusing you of actually being you. That guy, Jesus Christ, what a slob that guy was. Put a belt on your pants, pal.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, way older and way fatter, which really says bad things for him, I suppose. The six teams on the bye this week, Miami, Los Angeles, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, Baltimore, and the New York Giants. Thursday nighter will gloss over as per usual. 2-4 Jags at the 3-4 Titans. Kickoff 8:25 Eastern time in Nashville on the NFL Network only for some reason. Maybe it's because the game sucks. Jim Nantz, Phil Sims, Tracy Wolfson on the call. Tennessee started laying 3.5 points. They're at the standard issue missionary position, home team laying 3 points, yawn type thing that Vegas likes to do so much. So, and looking at this again, hard to get my hands around these two teams. Neither of them very good right now. Neither of them very consistent. Both of them pretty much only getting over on some of the weaker sisters thus far, by and large. And, again, my sense in looking at this, I'm just going to defer to the macro picture here. I've said that the Jags, I thought, could be a playoff team coming out of the South here. This is still anybody's division. But if they're at 2-5, it starts to get a little bit deep even for them, because this is not a team that's going to rip off a couple of games in a row, no matter how soft the schedule. I will take Jacksonville going in on the road and punking out those Tennessee Tuxedos tonight. Take Jacksonville getting the 3.
I think I've only played one Thursday game so far, maybe two. I know I had Denver in the first one against Carolina, and I had San Diego against Denver. There might have been one other one I lost, so maybe I've played more than I think. But this will not be one of them. This is certainly not just the most unattractive Thursday night matchup to date. It will probably be the most unattractive Thursday night matchup of the whole year. Probably a real low handle in Vegas. The 3, I can't disagree with Vegas here. Reasons not to like either side. I watched Jacksonville quite a bit last week. I had them against Oakland, and they did not look like a good football team at all. They looked really bad. I think a lot of the things that I said about Blake Bortles back at the start of the year are coming to fruition. His, any love towards him in the offseason was kind of a byproduct of fantasy stats, that were quite frankly came about because the Jags were trailing late in games last year. Tennessee, don't want to play them as a favorite. They have failed to cover each of the last 2 weeks in that role, backdoored by Cleveland, and then last week lost outright to Indianapolis. This looked like a favorable stretch for them with Cleveland, Indy, and Jacksonville at home. They desperately need this win. This division stinks. It's very obvious. I'm passing.
Don't blame you for that one. This one, and again, as far as it being on NFL Network only, I think that this is a game where they probably offered this one because we're right about at the point in the schedule. I think CBS wrapping up their part of Thursday night, NBC is about to assume theirs. This one falls in between. Probably offered it to either network. Do you want this one as an extra? And then the networks are probably like, no, thanks. We'd rather show the director's cut of Freddy Got Fingered rather than put this thing on our station. So that's my guess.
My least favorite movie of all time, Freddy Got Fingered.
It wasn't a good one. I'll put it to that way. I didn't, and I'm somebody that doesn't necessarily dislike Tom Green humor, but a little too much there. Nobody to rein him in, so to speak. We go to the London game on Sunday.
Shittiest movies I've ever seen.
It's pretty bad. But speaking of which, segue alert. Not nearly as bad a game as we usually foist on the Brits here. So you're welcome, Great Britain. The 4-3 Redskins versus the 3-4 Bengals. 9:30 Eastern time from Wembley Stadium in London on Fox. Five-time lounge guest Kenny Albert on the call with John Lynch and the delicious Pam Oliver. This is a game where Cincinnati, the ostensible home team in this matchup, is laying the 3 points, funnily enough. It was 2.5 points at the outset. And this is another one here again. I think we're at the point in the season where I might guess that it gets a little bit less dangerous to start making some macro level plays. This is going to be kind of my second one in a row here. I have a much easier time seeing both of these teams at 4-4 than I do the Redskins 5-3, the Bengals 3-5. The Redskins getting some injuries of late, which is going to really complicate things for them offensively. And a note courtesy of USA Today Sports Weekly here, of course, the Bengals have been crappy on third down conversions this year. Happily enough for them, facing a team that's crappy at stopping teams on third down. Sounds like the sweet sounds of convergence to me if you're a Bengals fan. I'll take the Bengals laying the 3 points here, quote-unquote, at home in London.
Yeah, I'm not surprised you're doing that. I actually thought when I looked at the slate and thought of you, I thought this might be a candidate for your big three, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Bengals put up a ton of yards last week on an absolutely atrocious Cleveland Browns defense. I mean, the fact that a team could gain more than 550 yards in an NFL game is just stunning to me, even with the rule changes. That just should never happen. It's going to be harder this week, obviously. Washington, a lot of self-inflicted wounds in that Detroit game last week, so I think they're going to play better. I don't disagree with your macro-level argument here at all. Washington was a team that I think we both thought would regress, but Cincinnati was too, and they've regressed already. We've seen, although, you know, they put a pretty challenging schedule. Favorites are, I believe, 11-5 now in London games, and this is a short number, so I'm not going to disagree with you going on Cincinnati, but I won't recommend it because the Bengals, generally speaking, are not a play-on team for me this year after they had the ridiculously good against the spread record last year.
Well, here's your CSI Miami alert for that game. You were talking about the Bengals and the Browns last week. Well, Jay, mm-hmm. I guess you could say Mike Nugent put a stranglehold on the Bengals' chances of scoring more points.
Oh, there we go.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
All right. Moving right along from that one here. It's the 4-2 Packers. Yeah.
I got to say something. You know who else I don't like?
Who?
And this won't surprise you. Ted Nugent.
Nugent is a quality human being. Surpassed, I'd say only his political take surpasses guitar playing.
Good Lord. I still remember that ridiculous.
Wang Dang Sweet Poon Tang.
That ridiculous guitar solo spot he had in the video of Damn Yankees High Enough when he started, like, kicking down blocks or whatever that was. What the hell was that, man?
Oh, I don't know. We'll just talk it up, generally speaking, to the greatness of the Nuge, shall we? So up next, it is the 4-2 Packers at the 4-3 Falcons, 4:25 Eastern time from the Georgia Dome in Atlanta on Fox. Tom Brenneman, Troy Aikman, Aaron Andrews forming the makeshift World Series A-team for Fox here as they have Joe Buck calling the Fall Classic. You have Atlanta in this game at home. Surprise, laying 3 points. It was 2.5 points initially here. And, again, kind of a tough one to pick. A lot of the ones this week I kind of feel like are. And I don't want to go too much on the whole bandwagon of here we go again with the Falcons, but I do feel like, yeah, especially in retrospect where things are always easier to kind of figure, that they were kind of a bubble here at 4-1. And again, I just feel like the Packers, I understand that there's been a lot of talk. Only the Packers could be 4-2 and have everybody talking about how crappy they are. But such are the expectations that have been built for them over the last period of time here, depending on how far back you want to go, whether it be the Rodgers days or even further back to Brett Favre. But I feel like, and again, generally speaking, more macro level stuff from me in a game that I'm having trouble getting my arms around. I just feel like the Packers have got to be kind of figuring things out soon here. I'm not ready to say that this is going to be a disappointing year for the Packers. They may or may not run down Minnesota for the division, but they still look like they're going to be a playoff team to me. Packers, I'm looking for them to be on the upswing. The Falcons have been on the downswing recently. Give me Green Bay, the road dog, in this situation, getting the 3.
I was tempted to go with you here. Green Bay's got the extra lead in time because they played the Thursday game last week.
Yes.
This is their first road game, by the way, though, since September 18th. They opened back-to-back
Weird.
Road games, Jacksonville, Minnesota, and have played 4 straight at home with a bye in between 2 of those games.
Yes.
So, been a long time since we've seen them play a road game. Here's the thing that stopped me, though, from going on Green Bay. And I should say that this was a team that was supposed to be favored in every game at the start of the year, Green Bay. So it's been a little bit of a change from the look-ahead line here now that they're a dog. But is Atlanta really going to dump back-to-back home games? That's kind of got me leery and staying off this one altogether. I was, by the way, on the Chargers last week. It was a hell of a game. God, did they make things interesting. If you want to watch just insane finishes, put the San Diego Chargers on every week. I think this Falcons team is a little better than last year. I also think that they don't have to worry about something like the Panthers last year. I mean, they're almost going to win this division by default, I think. I would be shocked if they didn't win this division, given the whole Carolinas in this year. And I just don't have a lot of respect for the two other teams in the NFC South. So it's not the end of the world if Atlanta loses here. And I wouldn't want to lay the points with them. But at the same time, I am kind of expecting a bounce back after 2 tough losses at Seattle and San Diego.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. There's a lot about this game that's really kind of confusing in terms of reasons to go for or against either team. Up next, it's more Bill Belichick versus Rex Ryan, which in terms of staleness right now, I'd say is approaching that whole Chavo Guerrero v. Hornswoggle series of matches some years ago. This game is New England at Buffalo, the 6-1 Patriots at the 4-3 Bills, 1 o'clock Eastern time, Sunday from New Era Field in Orchard Park, New York on CBS. Past lounge guest Ian Eagle along with Dan Fouts and Evan Washburn on the call. New England is laying 6 points in this one, up from 4.5 initially. It had gone to 6.5 at one point as well. So a revenge game for the Patriots after getting the unexpected ass-whipping a couple of weeks ago here against the Bills. The Bills, of course, being a team that I had said for a period of time now really kind of looked like a bubble, and I didn't necessarily expect to see it against Miami, but it did sort of materialize there. But this is a game where, again, I expect, particularly with some of the defensive injuries here, Darius, it looks to be kind of an iffy go at best. With New England's ability these days to run the ball when they commit to it with Blount and or White as well as pass the ball, I think New England is going to get their revenge here. I know you're going to tell me 6 points is a lot to lay on the road in a divisional game, and that's the reason it's not a big 3 pick for me. But nevertheless, I am on the Patriots.
I am going to tell you that 6 points is a lot to lay on the road in a divisional game. Very good. The Bills are my first recommendation of the week. I think the revenge angle will be a bit overplayed. The Bills? Yeah, there was something to the fact they were a bubble. I, too, was surprised they lost to Miami, but I think things have just swung a little too dramatically here. I'm not saying the Bills should be a pick'em here or favored. No, no, no. But this game should be close to a pick'em. I think there's some good value here. You mentioned the line open 4.5, which is kind of dead zone. It was bet up to 6.5. There's been some buyback on the Bills, obviously, which is why it dropped to 6. 6 is still a key number, so I'll ride with it. As much as the revenge angle is going to get the play, you know, the Bills have just 4 wins against New England since 2000, and they last swept in 99. So, you know, this game's a big deal for them, too, because if they ultimately miss the playoffs, they might, you know, look back on that Miami game and point to that one as why what hurts them. Because they're not faring well in the tiebreakers right now. They have a lot of wins against the NFC West, I believe, which is going to do them no favors come December.
That's right. That's right. It's going to be very difficult for them if they end up getting into the grid at 9-7 and having to sort themselves out against everything else that's going on. 2 teams that will not be in the grid, we can call it right now, the 2-5 Jets at the 0-7 Brownies, 1 o'clock Eastern time from, I still call it, Cleveland Brown Stadium in Cleveland on CBS. Kevin Harlan, Rich Gannon on the call. Jets are laying 3.5 in this one, up from 2.5 initially. And, again, fun fact here, first time in history that the Browns, Cavs, and Indians have played in the same weekend. So that you wonder, will the winningness of the other teams here sort of – yeah, because that's how it shook out, basically. I read that courtesy to the plane dealer in Cleveland for that little factoid. And, again, so one could start, if one wanted to, in a mystical sense here, ascribing some winning karma coming the Browns' way. But we've watched them for 7 weeks. I think we know better than that, that the overall stench of this garbage fire, this dumpster fire, is stronger than that. Having said that, though, they've been that on a couple of different times, annoying, penis-punching kind of a team hanging around here. I'm here to tell you, this team, for as much as people want to make the comparisons to the Lions of, what was it, 08? I think that went 0-16. This team, they're clearly the worst team in the league. And they'll be one or two or three games worse than anybody else in the league at the end of the year, which is in and of itself unusual. But this team's not going 0-16. I'm planting my flag right here, right now. There's not too many games on the schedule that are winnable for a team this pathetic. But the Jets, with their whole will they, won't they thing with Ryan Fitzpatrick and committing to him, they're a circus and they're a dumpster fire all their own. As the first of what will be just a few winnable games the rest of the way here for the Browns, I'm taking the Browns getting the 3.5, and I think, believe it or not, they're a live dog, and that's way more about how pathetic the Jets are than how even close to respectable the Browns are, because they ain't.
Josh McCown is going to go here for the Orange and Brown.
Josh McCown greater than Ryan Fitzpatrick, by the way.
I don't know. To me, it's not a debate even worth having. it just isn't. Like, I don't get involved. I just don't get involved in those
Clinton
debates.
Clinton versus Trump of quarterback debates.
you know, it's like it's like my buddy, who the same guy as honking Jill Stein all over Facebook, is like, you know, he loves to get these, like, stupid Browns quarterback debates, like Anderson v. Quinn. I'm like, dude, you're arguing between nothing, man. Who cares? I do completely agree with you that this is the most winnable game on paper in the Browns' schedule.
Yeah.
The Jets are often upset. The Fitzpatrick thing is bizarre. It could be ugly. I would not credit him too much with the win over the Ravens. Now, I will say I didn't watch a ton of that game. It was kind of off to the side. So I can't really evaluate them, but, you know, there's a reason, you know, this whole, oh, you know, the team stopped believing in me, you know, oh, woe is me. It's like, dude, you had a 6-interception game.
Yeah.
Like, of course they would stop believing you. Like, 6 interceptions in an NFL game is really shitty, okay? I don't, just in case if anyone out listening is unclear on that. But here's the thing with the Browns, just because it, on paper, it's their most winnable game, doesn't mean they're going to win it. I need more points than this to take the Browns. If they do win, I will not be shocked, but I'm not recommending it. I would absolutely not play the points with the Jets. I'll tell you that much.
That sounds reasonable for two garbage teams. I really can't disagree much with anything you said there. Up next, it's the 5-2 Raiders versus the 3-3 Bucks, 1 o'clock Eastern time at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa on CBS. Another 1 o'clock game for the Oakland Raiders in the Eastern time zone here. Kids, if you ever grow up to own an NFL team, don't ever sue the NFL, because even well after you die, the NFL will make you play in strange and unfamiliar time zones. The game's on CBS. Andrew Catalan, Steve Tasker, Steve Berline, Chris Fisher on the call here. This is a game where Tampa Bay is now getting 1 point, opened up as a 1 point favorite here, went up as high as 1.5. Looks like they're getting a point now. So this is one where, with that being the case, it's kind of an interesting one here, because I started off on Tampa Bay, and I know your whole thing about what happens with teams that are, that start off as a favorite and become a dog. To be perfectly honest with you, it's not even influencing my play here, because the latest line move is something I checked right before showtime, and I already had this baked into the cake. And I'm just looking at it going, again, the Raiders have fared very well thus far this year. You've pointed out to me in the past their lack of success with 1 o'clock time zone starts in the east here. And again, it just is a matter of I figure regression to the mean at some point. In another game that's really kind of tough. But again, I picked the Raiders to make the playoffs, but 6-2 macro level, can't quite see it. Unlike you, I can kind of see the Bucs at 4-3, not because I think they're a great team, but because if they're right around 7-9, 8-8, it really wouldn't surprise me. I guess I think a little bit more of the Bucs than you do at this point in time. They beat one team from the Bay last week. They're going to sweep the Pacific Bay Area series here, actually in the Tampa Bay, no less. But they took out the Niners. They're going to take out the Raiders. I'm on the Bucs here, getting the point now at home.
You know, just because I unsuccessfully played against the Bucs last week, I don't think necessarily means you're any higher on them than I am. I just thought that the idea of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as a road favorite is somewhat disgusting. And, you know, for about 5 minutes there, I looked really smart because they were down 14-0, and then unfortunately they played the next 55 minutes of the game. But I digress. This, to me, is a game that I want no part of. Both of these teams have completely not only exceeded my own expectations, but they're exceeding just the plain numbers. When you look, I'm going to make a weird comparison here, but I think you're going to like it, Ricky, and if no one else does, that's just too bad. The Oakland Raiders are the Texas Rangers of the NFL this year, I think.
Okay.
What do I mean by that? Well, they're clearly not as good as their record. They're just not. Until last week, they were in the red in terms of point differential. Let me look up right now. I think they just climbed into positive territory here. If I can bring up NFL standings, and it will just be one click, if you can please... wait for me. Yep. They are now plus six. Okay. So I can beat my chest and complain how the Raiders aren't as good as their record. But here's the thing. Moving forward, this is for the Raiders. Those wins are in the bag. You can't take them away. It's just like Texas. You know, I said all regular season, this team's not good. You know, they're a 500 team in division leaders' clothing. But, you know, the thing is, they're going to make it. Got to a point where it's like, well, you know, they've got all these wins in the bag. They're gonna make it to the playoffs. We saw what happened there. I could kind of see that happening with Oakland. This is – defensively, this team is very bad. I know they played well last week against Jacksonville for some turnovers. But on the flip side, Tampa Bay may be overachieving even more, Ricky. Despite the 3-3 record, they've been outscored by 31 points this year. Now, a lot of that is owed to one ass-whooping they took at the hands of Arizona. But still, I mean, we're, you know, almost at halfway to the schedule, through the schedule. Point differential should stand for something. I'm completely off this game. Whoever wins here, I am firmly confident in saying, is much better than their record.
Absolutely. And a rematch, as it were, of the Super Bowl back in 2003 here. So the Raiders will be hungry for revenge, but I don't quite think they're going to get it in this game here. Other team hungry for revenge, the Denver Broncos. They are at home. They got it handed to them a couple weeks ago on Thursday night by the traveling 3-4 Chargers. Again, the 3-4 Chargers at the 5-2 Broncos. 4:05 Eastern time from Mile High in Denver on CBS. Greg Dumble, Trent Green, Jamie Erdahl on the call. San Diego is getting 4.5 in this one. Had been 6 at the outset. A game where you look at the Chargers, it's been a disappointing season, but whoa, climbing up off the mat here, 3-4, but starting 1-4. A win here would be ginormous. They'd be a game back of the Broncos with the tiebreaker, so it's hard to see them running down the Broncos, but a win here opens up that possibility. I don't think it's going to happen. But again, you really don't want to bet on a team if you don't think they can win the game. I somewhat don't think they can win. I'm not convinced they can't win. But as I look at this here, the injury to C.J. Anderson, they're going to be relying more. Denver will be on rookie Devontae Booker. And the running game, the strength of the power running game here, has really done a lot for protecting Trevor Siemian throughout the course of the season. And he's going to be asked to do a little bit more, I think, than he's had to do thus far. And I think we would all be very agnostic on what the possibilities of that are at this point in time. I will take San Diego getting the 4.5 here on the road at Mile High.
Oh! We should have pointed out that, you know, I meant to say that the Raiders specifically are 4-0 on the road now, and all those wins are out east. I mean, that's
Yes. A
regression. There's a lot of regression to the mean they have in order from the last 10 years of their performances in those 1 o'clock time zone games. And
that's right.
Starting this year, for sure. I don't think anybody, even, you know, the biggest Raider honk. Well, you know, those people are kind of bizarre. Would have thought that team would have a chance to be 5-0 on the road at this point, all five
rookies.
Anyway, to this game, you know who I'm taking here. My San Diego Chargers, second recommendation of the week. I think they can beat the Denver Broncos. They obviously did it once already. That game was not as close as the final score indicated. This being the Chargers, they, of course, could not settle for a comfortable win. They had to let Denver come back a little bit at the end. This team's just rolling. Because I was so high on them, you know that this was my pick to be the most improved team in the league this year. Some of my friends let me know about it when they started 1-4, what they thought of me and my advice. But I repeated the line from Snatch and said, hey, you know, when I throw a dog a bone, I don't want to know how it fucking tastes, okay? So, and if you stop me when I'm walking again, I'll cut your fucking Jacobs off. But anyway, I'm on San Diego. I lost, you know. I tried so hard to remember that quote that I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, here, if you watch San Diego, this is a good team. I'm telling you. I mean, point differential-wise, I think they're plus 21 now despite the losing record. Denver's working on a short week here. We need to point that out. Denver, one of only two teams in the league to rank top 10 in DVOA, according to Football Outsiders. Green Bay's the other. So, a pretty balanced team, and they're doing a good job. Phillip Rivers is my hat's off to him, man. And they've got Miami and Tennessee at home the next 2 weeks. The turnaround is coming.
It really could be, and you've been calling it for a while. We go to the Sunday night game. Boy, there's a turnaround due for both of these fraud teams, in my estimation. The 4-2 Eagles at the 5-1 Cowboys, 8:30 Eastern Time, AT&T Stadium in Jerry World. Arlington, Texas on NBC, Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, Michelle Tafoya on the call. Philadelphia is getting 4 points in this one. Started off at 5, settled on 4.5 briefly in the middle. I'm looking at this thus far. I'm looking at what has been the strength of both teams to this point in the season, certainly for the Cowboys and with everything they've been doing with Zeke Elliott, helping to keep things honest for the passing game here. The strength of Dallas thus far has been their offense. The strength of Philly has been their defense. With two unproven quarterbacks coming into this game, that's what's going to sway me, is that it's going to be a more difficult task, I think, than we have seen thus far for Prescott through the course of this season here. So I think Philly can get underneath the four and can certainly win this game. I'll take the Eagles.
I don't like this game. I believe in Dallas more than I do Philadelphia. I will say that, but obviously, you know, that's built into the line. So that's what's going to discourage me from playing this game. There's been a history of the road team winning in this NFC East rivalry, FYI. So, you know, that favors the Eagles. But an Eagles team, by the way, that I took last week, who handed the Minnesota Vikings their first loss. But that, again, you know, we talk about teams that were above. How about players? Carson Wentz, yeesh, he has not looked good the last couple weeks, even in victory last week. That was all Philadelphia's defense. In that game, I watched it pretty closely, and Wentz really did not impress me at all. Dallas off a bye also, by the way. Teams off a bye have generally fared pretty well this year, except for Minnesota, ironically, last week.
That's right. So we'll have to see how that plays into it. There's another team off a bye that we'll be talking about subsequently here, but the last of my games before my big three, it's the Monday Nighter. It's the 5-1 Vikings at the 1-6 Bears, 8:30 Eastern Time, Soldier Field in Chicago on ESPN. Sean McDonough, John Gruden, Lisa Salters. On the call, Vikings laying 4.5 in this one, down from 5 initially. 5.5 was the line at one point here. This is a game where, again, I'm looking at a couple of things. I'm looking at expected regression to the mean a couple of different ways here. Again, the Vikings, I think, as was shown last week, a little bit of a bubble because, again, that offensive line, the running game, they've been kind of doing it and winning in spite of those factors. But Philly really put an end to that last week. Obviously, the Bears' defense is a lot different. But you look at these defenses again here, a turnover differential. The Vikings have been a lot better than the Bears here, and that has really fueled both teams being at the extremes of the NFL. And these are numbers that can regress to the mean at any point in time here, anytime you have big kind of outliers one way or another. So that's one that could be due to come back more to the middle a little bit. And, of course, the Vikings themselves had a decent number of turnovers last week. But also as well, the Bears. We keep pounding this in terms of what their home record has been the last couple of years at Soldier Field, as well as the Vikings' record against the spread. There's a lot of regression things that are coming into play here. I'll take the Bears getting the 4.5 Monday night, even though I don't have a lot of respect for them.
Wow, I like it. I'm with you. This is my third recommendation. Just hold your nose and take the Bears. There's not a lot of X's and O's stuff that's going to support a play on Chicago, but you know, the numbers you ran through, I completely agree with. You talked about the Vikings' ACS record bound to regress. I mean, they're not, you know, now we're finding them in the role of road favorites. Certainly we didn't see that at the outset of Mike Zimmer's tenure. And the Bears just have to start winning home games, don't they? I mean, my God.
You'd think so. You'd think that has to be the case at a certain point here. We keep waiting for it to happen. But as the statisticians say, the longer it goes, the more likely it is to happen at some point. Or maybe that's a variation on what they say. I don't know. I'm paraphrasing loosely here, people. But we get to my big three, which, again, have been pretty fugly for the year. I'm the first to admit. I love to brag, but I can't really on this 5-16 thus far on the season. Turnaround coming here, and we start with the 4-2 Chiefs at the 3-4 Colts, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis on CBS. Spiro Dita, Solomon Wilcox on the call. Kansas City weighing 2.5 on the road in this game here. And you and I have a saying a lot of times that has come up on the show, better team getting points. Well, that's certainly not the case here, but decently better team not laying a lot of points here. Inside of a field goal, I know, old road favorite Ricky, on the Chiefs here, but yeah, I'm going to be, because I think there's a gap between these teams at this point in time here. And again, the Colts, their record propped up, again, by being in such a garbage division and by some of the teams they've played thus far, the Bears out of division, but same kind of a deal right there. That 3-4 is a little bit misleading. They're not really within a game or two of being as good as Kansas City, which is just really solid on both sides of the ball, starting to get a little bit healthier. I'm on Kansas City in this one, and I'd say by a decent margin, they will get revenge for that playoff game a couple of years back, the wild card game.
Road favorite Ricky, going back to what he knows. Yeah, the Colts have really had the Chiefs number through the years. I think there's something like 12-2 straight up, 10-3-1 against the spread in the last 14 meetings. Now, that obviously goes back quite a ways to some players who, you know, have long since retired. But the word of the caution that I would ask you to heed with the Chiefs is, they didn't play too well last week at home against New Orleans. I know that they won 27-21, and they were kind of, and I think they were leading the whole way, but New Orleans could have really made a game of that if it wasn't for some self-inflicted wounds. I know the Saints outgained the Chiefs. I'm not quite as high on Kansas City as others are. I will go on the record and say that. And, you know, I'm not a guy who's going to lay points on the road, but at the same time, I don't like the Colts either, so this is a pass for me.
Okay. Understandable. We go to the next of the big three games. It's the 3-3-1 Cardinals at the 1-5 Panthers. 1 o'clock Eastern time from Obama veiled out Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte on Fox. Past lounge guest Sam Rosen with Daryl Moose Johnston and the lovely tanned Laura Oakman on the call. This is a game where Carolina, notwithstanding their garbage record, is laying the standard missionary position 3 points at home. It started as a pick'em. Rose to 2.5, now has reached 3 points, and looking at it here, a couple different factors here. Again, the Panthers, without exception, letting me down week after week after week. My garbage record and recommended plays is largely due to the Panthers. So what am I going to do? The roulette wheel has gone on red 10 times in a row, and I'm forced to put the mortgage certificate out there on black. I'm on the Panthers in this spot here, laying the 3 points. You talked about it before, the car wreck effect of playing Seattle the week after that game here. And for as long as they did here, too, a stat courtesy of USA Today Sports Weekly, which is unbelievable. Arizona on offense, 46 minutes and 21 seconds last week, the longest time of possession for any team in any game since 2001, and they still couldn't win with all that time of possession. The Cardinals, you and I said it this year, were going to regress somewhat. They will not get revenge for the 2015 NFC Championship game. Panthers to take their first step back towards quasi-mediocrity.
Yeah, it's funny to look at the Cardinals' kind of franchise arc here the last 3 years. 2 years ago, I think they finished 10-6, but they were a very mediocre team, and you know, a lot of people didn't think that was sustainable. Well, last year it turned out they were a really good team, and they had really good numbers to support it. This year, I think, is the flip of 2 years ago. They're a much better team than the record, but, you know, unfortunately they've lost and now tied a game where, you know, they needed some wins there. And that's going to cost them. We brought it up in our NFC West pod preview at the beginning of the year, the podcast we did, where we're like, wow, they're only projected for 9.5 wins? That's crazy. And it looks like somebody in Vegas knew something. Rick Morris, the Carolina Panthers are my fourth and final recommendation of the week. I will lay the points in this matchup. You detailed why it's such an awful spot for Arizona. Not only coming off Seattle, but they had to play them for 75 minutes, full overtime game. And, oh, by the way, this was bumped up from a scheduled 4:05 start to 1 o'clock for a West Coast team. Yep. That is cruel. Carolina off a bye? Oh, I think they get well in this game, buddy.
This was almost an Illuminati special for me on Arizona, because the random weird things happen in the league all the time. If Arizona wins this game, I may retire from handicapping, because I'll never be able to lean anything ever again.
They're a better team than Carolina. They've been a better team than Carolina this year, according to the numbers. There's no doubt about it. I just think the situation is so favorable for Carolina.
Yeah, well, Michigan State's been a better team than Carolina thus far this year. So, you know, let's keep it in perspective. We go now to my 1,000-star gold-plated Lock of the Millennium for NFL Week 8. And a game, Kyle, that you had to have circled for me as soon as you saw it on the schedule. Good old favorite Ricky here. It's the 4-1-1 Seahawks, aforementioned, at the 2-4 Saints, 1 o'clock Eastern time from the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans on Fox. Justin Kutcher, Charles Davis, Chris Spielman, and Holly Fonder is on the call here. And Seattle is laying 2.5 points, down from 3 initially. Another very short road favorite. And, again, macro level, Seahawks kind of just keep plodding on. They've had a lot of moments this year where they really haven't looked their best. The Saints at 2-4, at least offensively. Offensively, they're playing better than a 2-4 team should. Defensively, ugly, but not as ugly maybe as you would have expected thus far to this point. But, again, a revenge game for Jimmy Graham, who's had a little bit of a better season going thus far at this point in time. A revenge game for the Seahawks for losing that joke playoff game when the I have that backwards. It would be a revenge game for the Saints because the Seahawks won that playoff game. I got halfway into my thought and stopped myself here. So revenge will not prevail on that side. I got halfway through that and was like, wait a minute, I have it backwards. Nevertheless here, I'm on the Seahawks, a much better team, laying a mere 2.5 points, America.
I'm not going to disagree with that, but it's worrisome that the number has traveled with the key number of 3, and we've gone from 3.5 to 2.5. That's very worrisome to me if I'm on Seattle. That shows me that the books are not worried about Seattle money. And maybe they should be, because, I mean, you're right, Seattle's a much better team, and I think I'd be really surprised if New Orleans won here. Sorry, as I swallow a combo, that was real professional. But, I don't know. It's just my usual. I don't like the Saints, but at the same time, I'm not going to lay points on the road. So, no thanks.
Okay, all right. Well, my pick 3 are Carolina, Kansas City, and the lock pick of Seattle. Your picks here, you are coinciding with my pick of Carolina. Additionally, you are on Chicago, San Diego, Buffalo, 4 picks here. You were loading up largely on the dogs, as is generally the case. 3 of the 4 picks are dogs, and we'll see how Week 8 plays out, buddy. Things are due to turn around for you and I. We know this.
Yes, a 4-0 sweep, and I'm back over 500, so that's the plan.
That's how it's going to go, everybody, and we'll be here to gloat about all of that next week. But thank you for being here with us this week on the FBH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN
News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.